morning. My name is Monty Rowland. I'm with Monty Design in Morrisville, North Carolina. And this morning, what I'd like to talk about is how to structure your project from a file standpoint and from an organizational standpoint. Monty Design is a full-service design firm in Morrisville, North Carolina. We provide industrial design, mechanical engineering, and prototyping capability on demand to help you move your project from concept to ready for the shipping dock. It's always good to have processes and procedures. Now, I think any company can take that too far. And the counterpoint is, if you take it too far, then you get that big company mentality and you're painful to deal with. But a lot of these processes and procedures benefit the company. And I'll be the first to admit, as we've grown, I've not been the biggest proponent of procedure and process, because as a small group, you get everybody reading your mind and you don't have to worry about it. But this changes as you have more employees, because you have different levels of capabilities, you have to keep retraining, and so all of a sudden, it's more important to have policies and procedures just to make life easier for your staff. It's also important when you think about interns. You got someone that's going to be there for a limited amount of time. You want to get them in, get them trained, and get them some experience, and then also get some work product completed so it's a win-win for both the employer and for the intern. So let's just dive in. A lot of these topics I've covered in past podcasts were much more higher level. And so in this case, though, I want to dive in and let's talk about this in detail. So first thing is that when you think about how do you organize your files, you want to have a place that everybody can get to. So let's call it the Z drive. And on the Z drive, you have a space that is a shared working space. Now, what you need is you need a set of rules so everybody knows what to do. On a project where there's more than one contributor, you really want to have a gatekeeper. So the gatekeeper is in charge of files that go in certain locations. One is that files that go in current design, and the other is files that go in your release directories. So let's kind of roll through those directories so I don't get too far ahead of myself. The current design, well, back up. So we've got a project directory. Let's say our project is Zixis, spell that one. And so I create a directory in this case, maybe for the client, Zixis, and then I have to make a decision. Is it likely I'm gonna have multiple projects from this client, or is it likely that I might just have one? Or I not know. So maybe what I'll do is that I'm thinking that this might be a repeat client. So let's say that if it is, then I'm gonna wanna have a directory for each project that we do for that client. So we've got a directory called clients, got a directory called, and then the client name, and then underneath that, let's say project A is the vertical inductor. So we create a directory called vertical inductor. And under vertical inductor, we've got several directories. And what we try to do is keep these file names the same so that it's consistent for everybody. Otherwise, you run the risk of people not knowing where the correct file is, which could be really, really bad. Because if you don't maintain control over where files are placed, then you end up with names like 12 February 04, 13 February 04, 29 November, and or latest old, latest new. So you can imagine that someone stepping in who isn't the person who created those directories is not going to have a clue which is the correct set of files. Same thing for the person who created them, who comes back 6 months later, may go, I don't know. And the scary part is you might grab the wrong files. Let's say you grabbed the wrong files and made some parts. You just made some scrap metal, potentially. Or worse than that, it may take you a while to figure out what's scrap metal and what's not, and that may be more expensive than just doing the whole thing again. So, in order to avoid that entanglement, what we do is to have a directory called Current Design. Current Design is the working directory. After the project's over, the files in Current Design theoretically should be the latest, but may or may not. So then, but while the project's active, Current Design should always have the up-to-date files. And that's not necessarily released, but that's the current working files. And by working files means your ones you're working on. Maybe if you just released, then maybe those are the latest, same as the released. But if you're between releases, then your Current Design is your is the directory that you're using to pull files out of. Now, once you get a lot of hands working on a project, it's always good to have a gatekeeper. And the gatekeeper is the person who controls what goes in Current Design. So he may have 10 people providing files to him, and then he turns around and puts those in Current Design. We also have a directory called Released. Released contains files that have been released. And what released means is it's gone out to the vendor. Because most of the time we're operating in a development mode, our release policies may be a little different than your released policies in a large manufacturing facility or in any manufacturing facility. Because what we do is every time a drawing goes out to a vendor, we bump up the rev. In absence of a specific revision policy, what we do is we go up by numbers. So we've got a part number, and then the revision starts at 00, goes to 01, 02, 03, 04, 05. So we could have a release at 07, a release at 12, a release at 99. Don't care. So one of the things I think it's important to keep in mind is that your revision number structure is something that someone eventually picks. And as long as it works for you, it just doesn't matter. It just needs to be consistent. You could do 8.1, 8.2, we've seen that. You could do a major release is A, a minor release is numerical, so it could be 8.01 or A01. Or we just think it's easier just to 01, 02, 03, 04. Now, whenever we release a drawing to a vendor or send it out to someone who may use that to make a part, then if we make changes to that drawing, we revise that drawing. If the change is very, very small, i.e. does not affect the final result that you get back, then maybe it's not revved at that point. So, for example, if you add a comma to a note that cannot possibly affect the outcome of the part, it's just to fix some grammar, then maybe you don't release that if you're in the middle of development. At the end of a project, everybody has drawings, sure, you'll need to rep that. So the release directory, so we've got a directory called released under our induction directory. And so then underneath that, we'll have rev, R-E-V, space, 01. And so that's our first release when we first send out drawings to someone or to the client, call it rev 01. The next time we have a release, we'll call it rev 02. It's important to note that part numbers and assembly drawing numbers may not necessarily align with this rev 02, rev 03. It just means it's the next time we released a set of drawings. Now it may, depending on the client's needs, there is a possibility that we may rev the assembly to match the top level assembly to match that revision in the directory. Kind of depends on where we are in the development process. But that way you always know that here is the latest and greatest that we've sent out.
release directory also gives you a historical reference for what you're working on. So that way you can go back and look at earlier versions of files if you need to. Hopefully you never need to, but if you had a corrupted set of files or something along those lines, you could. We also create concept directories, and that concept directories will then have subdirectories underneath that indicating which part of the project. So maybe if you did sketches for the rear mount or the fascia, they might have separate directories. Usually we name concept sketches by date, which seems to work well, but that's up to you. So usually what I'll do is I'll do 2014 space Feb space 24 space dash space and then the name of the concept, rounded fascia concept, not PDF or what have you. The concept directory is where you'll store your sketches and your ideations, maybe your solid model concepts, pictures of your style board. So then when you think about these files we're starting to store, you really have two types of files. One type of file is parametric, and the other type of file is static. And then, really, I guess a third file would be like a file that's directly editable. So, when it comes to CAD files, though, we have two types. So, parametric files are files that are linked or potentially linked to other files. This is very, very important to keep in mind. So with SolidWorks, we can save a non-parametric file to a format like STEP or DXF or IGES or DWG or PDF. These non-parametric files can be edited like easily in the case of a DXF or DWG, less easily in the case of a PDF. And so these files, though, are generally not going to change, well, just because you change something somewhere else in the SolidWorks model. However, the SolidWorks files from SolidWorks are parametrically linked in many cases. So, for example, a drawing file is going to go reference the part file to rebuild the drawing. So, if the part file is missing, it can't reference it and can't rebuild the drawing, and you get basically a blank screen in the middle of your drawing. So, this is very, very important to keep in mind. Whenever you move files from one directory to the other, and occasionally you need to do this anyway, you run the risk of orphaning a file that's somewhere else. So a good example of this is, let's say that I am working in SolidWorks, and I go to McMaster Car and I download a screw, which is a great way to get a screw. So I download that screw, and then I open it up. It comes across as a step or an IGES, and then I import it into my model. And when I hit save, that McMaster car screw was saved to my download directory on my local machine. So if I don't consciously save that to my current design file, current design directory on the server, then, or on the Z drive, then what's going to happen is that now I have files in two different places. So if I was to go and grab current design and move it into released, let's say, just copy it over, I would leave that screw behind. Because the copy tool in Windows Explorer does not know about the relationship to SolidWorks, so it doesn't know to go grab that.
SolidWorks has this wonderful utility called Pack and Go. Pack and Go finds every file that's linked to the files in the that you have open. So what you want to do is go to the top level, let's say drawing, or top level assembly. Open up Pack and Go, and then it'll give you some options. And generally, you want to exercise all those options in terms of including drawings, including the textures, including decals, FEA results. Grabbing all that's good. That way you don't leave something behind. SolidWorks will go look for those files, make a list of them, let you see that list, and then you pick a location where you either want to save that as a zip file or you want to save that just to that directory. Drop the files in that directory. So you choose that directory and then you hit OK. Then SolidWorks will think, and then it will start grabbing files and copying them to that directory. If you do not do this, it will bite you. It is not a question of if it will bite you. It's a question of what moment, what day, and how bad. Because we've seen this before. You can imagine that if you have files on a local machine and you just copy them over, or you copy them between places on the Z drive or what have you, and you orphan some of these files, it can be very painful to find those, get those back, and then you're never really sure you have the right one. So let's say you orphan a single screw. Okay, worst case, you go download it from McMaster again. But let's say that you have somehow ended up with a part file that's in an unknown rev, or even if we know what the rev should be, and maybe it's in some directory. It could very easily happen that you inadvertently saved it to the wrong directory. So maybe you're working in current design, but you're using a file from Rev02, but that file is actually Rev07. So you grab the stuff out of current design, move it to Rev08, you miss the Rev07 file. Well, now all of a sudden, we've got no clue where to find that file. And it's difficult to find without pulling up every single file in both on the in the subdirectory on the Z drive and on your machine and try to figure out which one it is. And even then, we've got to go by the revision number in the properties. And that's just painful because that still doesn't tell us it's the right one, because there could be like a 7 here and a 07 here, and which one's the correct one. If you do Pack and Go, you avoid so much of that trouble. Pack and Go is your friend. This is one of those things that's important to emphasize. So, the similar thing applies to other programs. For example, PowerPoint has a Pack and Go feature. Use it. Grab all these images, put them in a Pack and Go file, because that most of the time when you're working on projects, you end up with images in different subdirectories. It's on a local machine. It's on your network. But if you do Pack and Go, it grabs all those and puts them in the same space. Yes, you use more disk space. I will argue that disk space is dirt cheap compared to a few hours of looking for a file you can't find 10 minutes before your deadline. The same goes for, you know, you're working in Adobe, any of the Adobe products. If you have the option to embed it in the file rather than link to it, embed it in the file. I realize this can make your catalog a gigabyte in size, but it's so much better than 2 months later pulling it up and missing files. There again, disk space is cheap, time's not. So embed those files, Pack and Go. Use these features in these programs so that it makes it easier. All right, so it's also important to note that you have a PLM system, and you do check-ins and check-outs. It's going to be a little different because that software is going to manage a lot of what we're talking about. So I'm not sure. I think it's beyond the scope of this podcast to go in depth on the PLM systems, but and they're great. They're awesome. They help manage some of this. So in this case, we're just talking about the manual. But on the other hand, if you understand the manual, it makes it a lot easier to understand the PLM. So we've talked about our current design, released. Let's go back to release for a second and talk about revving assemblies or not to rev assemblies. It's going to be driven by several things. One is that if your design changed dramatically and the assembly doesn't look like the parts, you need to rev the assembly. Other times you may need to rev the assembly is if you have a vendor that has a PLM system that is tied to the assembly rev and doesn't have the flexibility to control it to make a change to their drawing set without a revised assembly. We've seen that. We have a project right now we're working on. They don't have that control. So if we make changes, we have to revise the assembly just because we revised a part. And the problem is that if you have to do that, there may be a lot of sub-assemblies in between, so it's definitely a lot of work to do that. And so you're kind of starting to see, as a manager now, why sometimes your engineers are reticent to do revisions, because there is some work to it. So other directories that you'll need, one is that I create a project management directory. Project management directory has contracts, has any schedules, things that you need in managing the project, but maybe not necessarily need to execute the design. So another thing we would do is that we want to create a bill of materials. The bill of materials is so handy. As the project goes along, your bill of materials is going to become a costed bill of materials. So at the end of the project, what we want to see is we want to see a bill of materials that has a part number, a description, a revision, and has costing information. Now, depending on the project, there may be some projects where that's completely handled by the client. For a Montegear project, one of the last steps is to make sure that bill of materials is correct, has the costing information, and then that is used by the person doing the pricing, which often is me for Montegear. I will take that, and if that bill of materials is done correctly, what I can then do is add the cost of labor to do assembly, any shipping costs, and then I know how to price the product without going through and pulling up a bunch of drawings. And this is so important later on. It saves a tremendous amount of time. So as you go through the project, other directories we're going to want to have is quotes. So every time a quote comes in, scan it in. If it's electronic, save it. Create a directory of your quotes from your vendors in one spot. So that's a subdirectory under your project directory. You got quotes. So we've done current design, concepts, quotes. Another one you'll often have is something called files from client. And so those are files that the client has provided. These are documentation that where they've given you pre-project documentation. There may be initial version of a product specification. And so this is that repository of those documents. There again, a lot of times we'll save those file names by date. If it's a quote, we'll save it by date and vendor name, and then possibly, you know, what that is if it's a single part quote. So you can quickly scan down that directory and find the quote for the lower left beam or what have you. And you may have other directories as needed. Those will depend with projects. One of the other things we do is create an images directory. And then the images directory, underneath it, will have a description of generally of what that image is about. So it might be /images/ first prototype, or date first prototype, date proof of concept, date alpha prototype, date beta prototype, date installation. So that way, you can scroll through there and very quickly find those images. It's also a great place if you're a manufacturer to also put your product shots or your products in use. Maybe they're static images done in the light tent. But that way, you've got a great way to go find that because it's tied to the project. So this project directory, theoretically, if you were to just copy that to a flash drive, it would have everything you need to continue with that project. And that's good because over time, hard drives change, files get deleted, directories get changed. But so if you encapsulate everything in that subdirectory, then that makes life a lot easier. So kind of to roll back through this, we've got parametric files, we've got non-parametric files, and then we've got files that are often edited. And so the parametric files are SolidWorks files. It could be Inventor, it could be Pro-E, but those are files that need to be kept together, need to be moved using a pack and go. And occasionally with your current design, one way to make sure you have the correct files in there is to pack and go to a temporary directory, delete the files in current design, and then copy those back in. And that way you know you don't have some superfluous files in there. Other files that we'll create and need to do something with are non-parametric files. So these could be IGES, STEP, DXF, DWG. And these files in the release directory, it will have the parametric files plus a PDF of each drawing and maybe a DXF or DWG if that's needed to do a cutting process, say a 2D cutting process like water jet or sometimes a machine shop if they're working from a 2D file. It also has the 3D non-parametric files like STEP or IGES. And so that way in that release directory, you've got the CAD files plus you've got the files you're going to send out to vendors, the non-parametric files. Then probably this would be a good spot for your bill of materials for that rev. And so in this case, a lot of these files follow the same format. It's part number, for us at least, it's part number, space dash, space description, underscore, rev, R-E-V, underscore, or excuse me, space, and then the two-digit revision code, so 00 or 02. And so we do this to keep these file names consistent so they're easy to read through quickly. And that way everything is, you can very quickly figure out what you're looking for. If you don't maintain control over file names, you end up with file names that mean something to one person today, but may mean nothing to someone later. And 6 months from now may not mean anything to the person who named it then. So I think it's very important to maintain that control, have a strict doctrine over that. That bill of materials, it's important for costing purposes if you're a manufacturer, because that way your engineer is taking what they've learned when they went out for quotes, or the purchasing agent, whoever went out for those quotes, enters that into your bill of material. So now you can do your pricing quickly without having to go look for a bunch of information, which may be hard to find. Also, storing those quotes is valuable because then you've got a way to address that quickly there again without having to go look through emails or look wherever. So from a 100,000 foot view, what we want to do is we want this project directory to provide everything you need to pick up that project, modify that project, price that product, or deliver to a client. And if you can do that, then that helps multiple phases of the organization, not just engineering or industrial design, but also purchasing. It's great for a reference later for sales and marketing because they understand what's driving the cost, and it's just a win-win all the way around. And that's important to maintain that discipline, because it's not only helping you in the engineering stage, like I said, you'll reap benefits for the life of the product, especially if you ever have to go back and make a change, or you ever have to go back and reprice, or pricing on components change. it's a great tool. And having that in a standard format is just benefits you. If you have any questions about this, please don't hesitate to give me a call. I know it's kind of a long section here and technical, but happy to entertain your calls, questions. It's 1-800-722-7987. It's Monty Rowland. Email Monty, M-O-N-T-I-E, at Monty, M-O-N-T-I-E, .com. Or you can visit our website at www.monty.com. You can see the results of client work we've done at the Monty.com website, or you can see some of our projects that we've done for ourselves at Monty Gear, M-O-N-T-I-E-G-E-A-R.com. I hope this has been beneficial. Monty Rowland, signing out.